So this is an honor. I infrequently get to speak to him on the podcast, and we've only had a couple recordings in the past. It is, of course, the great Matt Aaron. He's back to kind of explain a transition in his life and where he's headed. He's effectively left Bitcoin.com and its podcast network there that he helped build into a real force, in my opinion, for good. And now he's talking with us about his departure, what that means, where he's headed, and maybe even a little bit of reflection on his time there. But before we get too far into this, Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, Kelso, thanks for having me. And it's a great idea, too, because I just think in general, it's important to reflect on your career and personal experiences and you know, learn from them. In this case, it's been a really positive experience and game-changing experience. I'm hoping, it's very hard to predict these things, but I would think that 10 years from now, I'll look back like, wow, being able, having the privilege to work at Bitcoin.com, and you did as well, right? It was a key pivotal part of my personal career.
Yeah, that brand has really, you know, been one of the stalwart, I guess, without reaching too much here for an analogy, pivoting points for just about everybody in the space who's anybody. And it's a really interesting time for cryptocurrency, and in particular for you, but let's for a second look back on your building the podcast network there. I know that they'd had some fits and starts and had people come in and give it a yeoman's try, but they didn't really have someone dedicated to the podcast spot and really kind of push until they hired you formally. Kind of tell us a little bit about your experiences there. You're saying that it was positive, and certainly you've got a ginormous, you know, body of work to prove it. But talk a little bit about what it was like working with that brand and building its podcast network.
Yeah, well, so Kelso, can I start with a story of how I got the job in the first place?
Yeah, that's actually a really good story.
Okay, so this is really funny. I was actually recalling it last night. So I got into crypto knowing nothing. Now maybe I know a little bit, but you know, we're still learning. We have no idea where this is going to go, right? But at the time, I was doing this hobby podcast because I have a background in podcasting. I think that's fair to say. I had a food podcast, which I sold right when I started Bitcoin.com podcast, or a little before that. And anyway, I was doing this hobby podcast called 5 Minute Crypto. And you know, I'll own up to it. The majority of the episodes were price predictions. So I would get some guy that would come on and he was a trader and say, I think the price of Augur, and you know, this is in the bull market, is going to be X. Or I even had a I had a guest on that made a prediction that IOTA was going to be worth, I think, $1 trillion by the year 2024. hey man, you know, I think I was right on that. Well, I don't think any of the predictions were right, but I think that maybe some of the short-term ones, but the whole idea of doing short episodes, which kind of carried into the This Week in Bitcoin podcast, people do like the shorter podcast, and there's a market for that because, you know, the Tim Ferriss, Joe Rogans are fantastic, but sometimes it's difficult to consume a 3-hour podcast, right? And so that kind of led the way to focusing on the, you know, 30 minutes or less, or sometimes 45 minute ones that we did on Humans of Bitcoin. But the funniest part is, so it's 2018. I'm sorry, it's 2017 in Bogota, Colombia, in December. I had just, you know, I'm doing this podcast. I'm learning. I'm trying to learn everything I can about crypto. I'm knee deep in shitcoins, man. I'm Bittrex, Poloniex. I'm buying, selling. And it seemed like out of heaven, the Latin American Bitcoin Conference, which is run by some pretty heavy BTC maxis, but at the time was friendly to Bitcoin.com, who was the main sponsor then, was having their annual conference. At, you know, sometimes it's Sao Paulo, but this year it was in Bogota. And I found out 2 weeks before, I'm like, dude, I'm going, told my friends, I rented a hotel room next to this conference. And the people that were there, I mean, it was, you know, Nick Szabo, who else? Tone Vase, you know, Nick Szabo being obviously a lot more impressive. but if you look at the list, I'm trying to recall who was there. I mean, Salt Lending, which at the time was a big project. Binance was there. And so, you know, like there were a lot of heavyweights there. Like Marco Santori from blockchain.com was the president, right? This was, you know, this is a legit conference. And I remember going and some funny memories there. But like one is for 5 Minute Crypto, I just emailed Roger Ver to set up a time to do, you know, what is Bitcoin Cash in 5 minutes? And so I did that from the hotel room and I went to the event and I published the episode. I probably had 45 listeners. So I go to the event and then I'm in on the floor and it was pretty funny because Binance was there. But you have to remember in December 2017, Binance was nothing. And I remember talking to them and a quote unquote shitcoin or altcoin at the time that I was very fond of was Digix DAO. This like gold based token built on Ethereum. And I was like, when are you going to add Digix? And they really talked a big game. They're like, yeah, we'll be adding Digix, blah, blah, blah. We have plans to like expand worldwide. And, you know, it wasn't CZ or anything, but some people working for them, they seemed nice and friendly, but just like every project there, they're like, we're going to take over the world. But it's funny looking back, they actually did, you know, but the backdrop of all of this is at the conference, there were so many ICO pitches. You can still watch it online, the La Bitcoin, but some ridiculous ICO pitches that even I could recognize being a novice that they seem pretty far-fetched. but at the same time, it's funny. I remember seeing the Bitcoin.com booth because they were the headline sponsor. And you know, I didn't engage with them just because, you know, busy, whatever. And so I had published this podcast during the conference. And then after I published it, Roger had said something that if you want to get Bitcoin Cash without the KYC AML stuff and get it anonymously, just get a job at a company that pays Bitcoin Cash. And I think one or two people had gotten back to me and they're like, well, but who pays in Bitcoin Cash, right? Two of the, you know, 14 people that listened to this episode I did. And so I emailed Roger and true to his form, just being very engaging to the whole community, whether you have one or a million followers, I said, Roger, you know, what company's paying Bitcoin Cash? And it's like, Bitcoin.com does. Are you interested in work? And then a week later, I negotiated with his number two and I pitched it and they're like, yeah, you can run the podcast network. And literally a week after I'd interviewed Roger, I had a job at Bitcoin.com. So it was such a quick change from being a nobody to at least working at a pretty established company in space.
Yeah, that's definitely par for the course when it comes to Roger. I love stories that highlight him anecdotally with regard to, you know, it's easy to kind of shit on the guy and so on, which a lot of people do as a matter of course nowadays. But it's nice to hear what he truly is, which is one of these people who's, you know, just down for it, just wants to make things work and happen. And he started a lot of careers, for better or for worse, I guess. But he's definitely started a lot of careers. And it's nice to hear, you know, tales about his generosity, because that's just the kind of guy he is, man. So you begin with, I guess, you bring on some people. You start Humans of Bitcoin, This Week in Bitcoin, and those begin to take off. You refine
and Blockchain 2025.
Totally forgot. Yeah, Blockchain 2025.
And I did that together, right? And
yeah, I did that for a little while with you. You were generous enough to invite me on. Humans of Bitcoin, Blockchain 2025, This Week in Bitcoin, and you even towards the end part there. Had Calle Bitcoin, I think, sort of a Spanish language podcast, and it was rocking. the guests you were able to pull was really, really interesting to me, because a lot of these people are very hard to get for because of demands on their time. But it, looking back at you know, your tenure with regard to the podcast network, what was the one get, the show guest where you were just like, holy crap, I got him or her?
Definitely Patrick Byrne, I'd say. That's not a slight to other guests that were also brilliant, but...
But he was the guy that was hardest to get.
Yeah, and that really helped, because Mate helped. We tried every angle, and, you know, I had a friend that went to Dartmouth where I think Patrick studied, and who had seen him speak before. And I mean, he's just a really remarkable person. I don't know exactly what happened with this whole Russia story, which is kind of the theme of, you know, US politics and media in general. I don't know what's going on with Russia, but with Patrick, I mean, it was just, you know, he overcame cancer 3 times before he was 25, you know, like a savant and, you know, literal genius and just, you know, contrarian thinker.
Our space, he was probably best known for Overstock.com and being one of the earliest online retailers to accept and sort of champion Bitcoin, right?
Exactly, yeah. And just, I guess I tend to gravitate towards the Peter Thiels and the Patrick Byrnes, you know, people like that, that are the contrarian thinkers that make big bets and think differently than most people. I enjoy following them and try to learn from them as much as I can. So that was really cool to have him. I mean, another one that I really enjoyed was my favorite book of 2019 was Mastermind about Paul LaRue, and getting Evan Ratliff, who wrote the book, on there, because it was just kind of a different style of podcast. And, you know, he's a great author, and he's kind of in the, not NPR, but the long form podcast. So he's kind of in that circle. The podcast with someone like that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, there was plenty more guests that came on that were quite interesting. And yeah, I mean, it was, listen, having the, I think Roger mentioned it to it when I started, or mentioned it to me, and just like, man, having that at Bitcoin.com really helps to get people to open your podcast request emails.
Yes. Yes. That's one of the best parts about working for Bitcoin.com is that everybody recognizes the brand. So when you query them, they're more than ready to at least hear what you have to say. So, but that doesn't mean that it's easy, as you prove with Patrick Byrne. It took some doing to get him there, and that's, by the way, I recommend it. We'll link to it in the show notes. A terrific interview. You learn a lot about the guy, and it's sort of interesting now, considering for those who might not follow the Byrne saga, but Matt alluded to it, that he's kind of, I guess, sort of went underground, and there was all this paranoia surrounding him and all sorts of stuff. But Matt, we have an inside joke, he and I, that there's sort of the curse of the Humans of Bitcoin podcast, because we work so hard to get these controversial or interesting people on and celebrate them in a way, and then they would turn out to be rather infamous later there. But that's super, super interesting. If you look back at all the people you interviewed, all the, you know, luminaries and stuff that you came in contact with, what are your takeaways? Like, what did you learn from the experience, and how is it going to kind of carry you forward?
Oh, that's a really good question. So just doing these interviews, I can't really summarize it very well. I mean, a lot of kind of osmosis, maybe just getting an hour and a half of these people, I think is always good for you. Just like if you read a seminal book 20 years ago, you may not remember what's in it, but I've always taken tidbits from people I've interviewed, and there's certain ones that stand out or a certain thing that someone says. Like, I mean, Eric Voorhees made a really interesting point that stuck with me. Just like if you want to get someone to be open to your coin, have them own some of it, you know? And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Just the skin in the game stuff. But I wouldn't say I have any like overall themes, but just going through the process and having these conversations, I think it can help, even if you're not able to explicitly say what it is. I do. It's actually pretty funny. You know, I don't know if a lot of people don't know this, but I interviewed Pomp about a pretty interesting podcast that he published that got taken down by iTunes, which was a pretty compelling case for Bitcoin and where it was going, and it got like taken off iTunes.
That was interesting.
But I also
this is Anthony I think Pompliano, people, right?
That's right. Of Off the Chain, I think people know who he is, right? And also I have to it was very funny. I know you had Davis, who I mean, maybe the curse of the CoinSpice podcast, right? Because Davis Carbon Based is no more on Twitter, who did and this is not against Pomp, I think Pomp adds a lot to the space, but just the funniest tweet I've maybe in the history of the world, which people listening, we all know that one. And it was not something that Pomp said. It was just a funny joke made by Davis, but he was censored. But I will say that people listening, you know, this is heavily BCH focused. And, when Peter McCormick came on, it was very interesting because he was, he comes on and before we start recording, he's like, hey, if you want, like, he said something along the lines, he's like, Bitcoin Cash, and this was definitely last, or maybe it was the end of 2018 or early 2019. Right. But yeah, somewhere around there, he's like, if you want to talk about why Bitcoin Cash is already dead, like we can go over that on the podcast. And I thought about it. And then like, you know, one, does the world need another debate? And then two, if someone says that a project that has transactions is dead, is it even worth going into it? And obviously he's become kind of rightfully so pretty infamous because of the vitriol and that he spits towards the BCH community. But so I kind of turned it around because, you know, I wanted to make a good podcast, and he actually told his personal story, and I think that was the first time he shared his personal story. And that's not something I don't agree with anyone making fun of him. Cause I mean, he had a pretty tough, last 10 years or so, apart from our different views on cryptocurrency and him being a BTC maximalist. I mean, I think you got to separate the two, but yeah, so it was pretty interesting. A lot of interesting experiences like that. When you ask me these questions, I start to visualize and think about all the things, the people got to talk to and the podcast I got to publish.
Because there was no distinguishing to some people who are real tribalists in the space between the Bitcoin.com brand and Bitcoin Cash and what they believed it meant. And so it was always really interesting how you could get people who otherwise would just be extremely hostile to anything BCH oriented. You could get them on the show and just kind of disarm them, you know, just have a polite conversation about their worldview and let them kind of express things. And I really enjoyed that. And the Peter McCormick interview was interesting, especially considering him now in his current light. That was a very, very good interview as well. All of them were. I wonder if they'll be historical documents in the way that I think they will, in that, you know, they captured this incredible bull run, the inevitable, disillusionment that comes when the bubble bursts, and then the fractionalization and, you know, all these other sort of trends. You can see it throughout the body of your work there. And there's so many, many wonderful interviews to choose from, to pick out. And I really do think they're going to be reference documents going forward. But
Can I add something else? That's pretty interesting.
Go.
And so this is for the whole industry, not just Bitcoin.com. And you know this, we all know this. But, I started December 12th, 2017, but it took me until I think January 2nd was the first episode I published. So January 2nd, 2018. So literally the price of Bitcoin Cash and crypto, the market just tanked, consistently, more or less from the time I started to the time I finished. And I was so naive at the time and just thought that this was just the beginning of a bull market that it was going to continue. Right. And that obviously affected, the amount of, who listened to the show, because, we designed the network around getting newbies onto the show, meaning that, people search for Bitcoin in Google and Bitcoin.com shows up in the first couple of results. We want to kind of have onboard people that aren't so familiar with it, because the whole idea is global adoption, right? But I think that especially towards the end, the the people getting into the, or you know, people listening to the show happen to be more people that are inside the cryptocurrency niche. And there's no doubt about it that the burst, you know, the whole bubble bursting in 2017 and, you know, January 2018, I guess, being the peak, definitely affected the trajectory and the content of the network.
Mm. Yeah, they do influence one another, and you see them in views and listens, and you know, also the willingness of people to talk to you. It's kind of funny. I don't know if you noticed this, but let's say Bitcoin or the relative crypto market was, you know, for say a stretch of a month or a few weeks, was going back up. I found people more inclined to pick up and pay attention to what we were doing. And then as it sort of falls, there's that initial rush of what's going on. And then price just kind of seems to, I don't think it's a main indicator, but it is among the indicators. It's almost like a grease or a catalyst that gets people to pay more attention. I guess that's obvious, but when you look back at those interviews, we talked about Patrick Byrne and Eric Voorhees and Pomp and these guys and McCormick. Was there I guess a person that got away that you wish you had interviewed and actually snagged during that time that just for whatever reason it just didn't work out?
Yeah, and so you know this. I mean, if you're not getting rejected or people not answering your emails or people saying they're going to come on and then just kind of blowing you off, which is fine, that just happens. You're not reaching far enough in terms of running a podcast. Like, you should be getting rejected. If everyone says yes, then you're not going high enough. And you see Tim Ferriss and, you know, people that have, you know, hundreds of millions of downloads consistently say this. But yeah, I mean, I think that what was actually pretty interesting. So I always wanted to bring on like hip hop culture. So I just thought that they seem to be pretty influential in the media today and getting. And so I had interviewed the owner of and the CEO of Fancy.com, who happens to be the godfather of Kanye West's baby. I say that out loud, but I'm pretty sure that's true. And there are pictures of this guy, Joe of Fancy.com with Kanye. But he's like, yeah, I know. He's like, I don't know if I can get you Kanye, but I can get someone like on the show from hip-hop. I was like, that would be great, because it was Humans of Bitcoin. And you know, it was, he introduced me to T-Pain, but so I was like, that would be cool to have T-Pain on. He never made it on the show. I'm sure he has a lot of stuff going on. But like, I know because T-Pain invests in a lot of crypto projects. But I mean, that was one. And then I sent this to you before, but remember that the Bitcoin.com forum had, this is before the split, right? So Bitcoin.com used to have everybody. There wasn't this division. And so you had, you know, Wences Caceres posted on the forum in AMA, and then people like Andreas Antonopoulos, not so much now, but definitely early when I first discovered Bitcoin, it was pretty important. And Trace Mayer came on the show, and it's just interesting. Those guys are off limits. And I always wanted to get Wences Caceres on the show, because he's, you know, kind of a very interesting character. If you've read any of the Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin history,
the Argentinian, right?
Yeah, yeah, and Zappo, and just, I think he was the guy that went around to, you know, Bill Gates and all these Silicon Valley geniuses and told them to start using Bitcoin at some you know, gathering in Colorado. I think that was in Digital Gold, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, interesting. Really, really, really interesting. So you have, whenever I spoke to you, you're always just like you are now, really positive, up. You have strategies, try to get around things. You're always working on problems and you know, trying to find solutions. Whereas I can be a negative Nancy and bring a black cloud. You're always the guy to kind of go, well, let's look at it this way, look at it that way. I never heard any displeasure from you about .com. I never heard any problems with Humans of Bitcoin or any of your podcasts. It seemed to me like you were doing just great, and people love the product, You were soaring along there, and all I ever saw was just great feedback about your work. I know I enjoyed it. So I guess the obvious question is, why the hell did you leave?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. That's mostly true. Listen, I mean, I think just in general, I was lucky enough to run Bitcoin.com has many products, right? So I cannot speak for people that are on the much larger products, the casino, the mining and wallet, right? Because, I worked remote for them, right? And I was very lucky to have pretty much full autonomy over what I was doing. So I was very happy with what I was doing. I think that, the main reason why I left is just personally, I wanted to have my own project again. And I had gotten into CBD coffee actually a year ago and drinking it myself. And I also thought about, to be honest, and this is weird to say it on a podcast, but I did 230 episodes. It's a lot, and as much as I enjoyed it, I kind of feel, Kelso, CoinSpice, they covered the BCH community, which is very important, right? Because it's unfortunately, and this is one of the biggest challenges, working at Bitcoin.com is just certain people just ignore us because they don't like BCH, right? And just, all the propaganda are Bitcoin. We don't really need to go into that. But the reason I mentioned that is I just noticed how many podcasts there are. Kraken has a podcast, CoinDesk, Cointelegraph, and there's so much work to do in cryptocurrency. And it's almost like there's a plethora of podcasts and content in general, right, for crypto. But a adoption has so far to go. And one thing I'd always talked about on the show, sometimes you have to walk the walk. I talked about how the cannabis industry makes so much sense for crypto, like a high risk banking. And there's the common, let's focus on the industries that are having difficulty with payments. Like I know people talk about Pornhub and adult entertainment, cannabis, maybe a lot of contractor trades where people may have murky immigration statuses and prefer to work in cash, things like that. And so a lot of that's like, well, why can't you do it? And of course there's a lot of imposter syndrome that we all have to go through, but it's like, yeah, why can't I become an e-tailer, e-commerce retailer and sell wholesale and advocate for cryptocurrency in the cannabis space, so just combining two of my passions. So it just started to make sense. I left pretty happy, and it was an amazing experience. But sometimes you can't, even though I just gave you a 3-minute rant there, Kelso, for some backstory, sometimes you make decisions. It's like, why did you marry that person? Or why did you leave this? You just kind of feel like it's the right time. And it might take maybe 6 months or a year for you to be able to explain what your instincts, which are usually smarter than your quote unquote logical brain. Does that give you an idea? Is that a fair answer?
I don't think there's any wrong one. It's really interesting. And I think if people don't already know, Matt has a background in entrepreneurial activity, just generally in terms of produce exporting or exportation, I should say. And he's sort of been a digital nomad before digital nomads were a thing, and kind of always likes to do things on his own and be a part of teams, but also create his own thing. And it seems like, it sort of run its course, and that's fair enough. And you're on to the next project. So let's talk about that then, because it sort of surprised me, like I said, that here you were, in my mind, sort of I call you the Walter Cronkite, which a lot of the young guys won't understand, of Bitcoin, in the sense that you're documenting our times and you're bringing us the movers and the shakers on the space, and then all of a sudden, poof, you're gone. But you're not, so in a sense, you're leaving sort of one aspect of the crypto world, but you're not leaving crypto altogether, right?
No, I mean, crazy calm, and shameless plug here, but I think it's relevant, is, we give you a 10% discount if you pay with Bitcoin and cash as a strategic move, not just a marketing move, but because of the difficulty in the payments process. And we're already educating, and listen, I'll tell you both sides of this, but we're already educating people in the CBD and cannabis space that have reached out to us because of the feature that news.bitcoin.com did on CrazyCombe, which just says a lot about the Bitcoin.com team that they're willing, even though I'm leaving, to feature the company, which is working for Bitcoin Cash. But it's been awesome, Kelso, because sometimes you get stuck in, the Bitcoin Cash is one, Ethereum is another, where you're in this community, and these things that, these commonplace words that you didn't know before, these terms or this whole subculture, but then the whole idea is adoption of people that don't really care about cryptocurrency. And so going through that process again, kind of going back to the beginner's mindset or working with beginners. So, I've gone on some cannabis podcast, and the first question is so hard to answer. What is Bitcoin? And I'm like, oh man, I forgot how difficult this is to explain, because it's, peer to peer electronic cash, but yeah, we already have cash. And it's like, yeah, but the Fed, and so it's going back into a whole new industry. And it's quite interesting that a couple CBD shops, one in Texas and one in, I think it was South North Carolina. Anyway, they reached out to us, and hopefully they'll both become customers to carry our product. And they're like, wow, we're into Bitcoin. Like, we support it, because there is a lot of people that are into cannabis tend to be into Bitcoin. There's some liberty things in common there, and some counterculture things in common. But it was interesting because I realized, Kelso, that there is a lot of people that bought Bitcoin and Ethereum and Bitcoin Cash and Litecoin in the whole boom. And they have, what once was, I don't know, $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,000. Now maybe it's worth $800 or $600, but they still have some crypto, and they forgot about it. But they're like, but I still don't fully understand it, but I think it's interesting. And I think there's huge potential there, being able to explain that to the cannabis sector, which to this day has serious banking issues. And I'm sure you're very close to that in Southern California.
Yeah. That is, there's two sort of hacky cliches in Bitcoin coverage. And the first, of course, is porn, and the other is pot. And it's just been done to death. Your eyes glaze over when you see an article. People inevitably put the plant up there, and some whack, guy out of his skull there, or the comely bimbo. I'm guilty of both of covering both in that way. But in recent years, the marijuana idea, especially focusing in here on the United States, for listeners, has really, really, really taken off. And it is about as grassroots as you can possibly get. It involves issues of nullification, where states are literally telling the federal government, no, we're not going to listen to your laws. And that has caused a super interesting tension between federal law, state laws, banking regulation, financial rules and regulations. And then, you have this burgeoning industry, which clearly people want. I don't need to even make a case for it. It's even under wraps, it was billions of dollars. And now that it's being slowly allowed into the marketplace, rather organically, it's growing by leaps and bounds. But as you alluded to, this industry, the cannabis industry at large, whether it's for its smoking, consumption, growing, and in your case, the non-THC part, which is the CBD medicinal aspects of it, the oil, I guess, they have real issues with trying to run the skeletal parts of the business, right? They have kind of the primary use case would be to employ cryptocurrency. And I do think, as much as it is a kind of a cliche, I think it actually is one of those things where it really is true that the industry can utilize this, and that these two, like you say, made in heaven innovations can work together to kind of promote one another. So that kind of seems like to me what it is you're doing with CrazyCombe Coffee, right? Now, I don't want to say it too fast. So it's Crazy, C-R-A-Z-Y, Calm, C-A-L-M, Coffee. Get into a little bit about what it is for our listeners and why anybody should want to try it, because the name itself is sort of interesting, Crazy Calm.
Yeah, it's a juxtaposition, right? And the crazy being for caffeine and the calm being for CBD. But I just want to add one thing. Remember what, you know, maybe the real life use case that proved that Bitcoin worked as a cryptocurrency was the Silk Road. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the number one selling product was marijuana. Don't quote me on that second right. part, but for 100%, Silk Road was, that's what showed that. And the great book that you recommended to me that is still, to this day, very few people have read in the Bitcoin space, How Money Got Free. You know, Brian Patrick Piha makes the case that, you know, after Satoshi, of course, which is Craig Wright, that the number two is Ross Ulbricht, who today is still in jail, which is just, you know, we don't need to go into that, not because it's not important, but I think everyone here knows the Ross story, and it's horrific. But yeah, I mean, so it's kind of coming full circle a little bit that to have it legally sold and paid for is kind of cool. I do think it's cool. And so Crazy Calm CBD Coffee, what is it? It's the whole idea of, and people that haven't tried CBD, this is not something that gets you high. It's a subtle feeling. And just for people that get the jitters, or sometimes I can't say the A word that starts with A and ends with a Y because FDA stuff, but sometimes people get jitters or caffeine crashes and they feel a bit accelerated. And, you know, anecdotally I've found, and some of our users have reported to us that have left reviews, you know, that it kind of, it's just a relaxing energy and a nice little twist to the usual effect of coffee. And we made an instant version because there are some, you know, ground coffee kind of locally sold, but a lot of people travel and want the on-the-go version of CBD infused coffee.
It's neat. It's a neat concept, and it's one I really haven't heard before. And I ordered a box of it, and you guys sent it along, and it's beautiful packaging. I love the quick. There's kind of these instant little packages. It almost looks like candy to me, but it comes in fast and quick. Was able to get the 10% discount, all that good stuff. And it really is. It's a wonderful product. And I don't have any financial stake in it whatsoever. So people are like, geez, he's pushing this hard. I'm just being honest. It's a pretty fantastic product. I'm not a big coffee drinker, but my wife is, and she likes it. There's an uncle somewhere in our family, and he's big into the CBD type stuff. And when he found out that we had some, he wanted it. And so he loves it. It sort of spreads organically that way, but it's the packaging on the outside also has these little icons on it, these cryptocurrency icons. And that is a great way to start a conversation. So not only do you get in on the CBD side, which is a lot of people tout for various reasons. And again, you know, neither one of us can speak to exactly what it does or doesn't do, but there is a lot, you know, literature out there about the subject that people can check out on their own. But in terms of CoinSpice and why we'd be interested in the product is simply because of the way it's being used in the business sense, in that you're not just a tourist, right? You're Matt Aaron, formerly of Bitcoin.com. You're a cryptocurrency pundit and a bit of an expert. And here you are, you know, putting it on the packaging here. It's an integral, at least at this point, part of your business plan. And so that also is a really interesting way to approach something like an over-the-counter product. I noticed you're just focusing on the United States. Is there any particular reason why that is?
Yeah, it's all because of legal uncertainty. So, you know, of course, combining, and I will say, this is worth mentioning because especially when I go on the cannabis-related podcast, I try to give a balanced approach. There are people in the cannabis industry that use cryptocurrency. They don't want to talk about it. I know there's hemp farmers in the southeastern United States that have and still use it, but they would never come on the show And I understand that. But the reason I mentioned that is that it's a lot of regulatory uncertainty, but this is any innovative industry, whether that's cryptocurrency, CBD, what Uber did, you have to be willing to deal with a certain level of regulatory uncertainty in what you're doing. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges to convincing the cannabis space, because they're like, man, I'm already paying my lawyer to help us, sell cannabis or our CBD beverage or whatever they're doing. And they don't want to add another gray area thing into the mix. And I think it's a little bit easier, especially with this law that hopefully will be passed in Congress, where if you spend under $200, it's you don't have to pay the, right. Like it's stock and stuff. So I think a lot of that's where the education is. And hopefully myself and other people can educate the cannabis industry. Hey, I think it is worth adding, cryptocurrency as a payment method. And even the other day I saw that very smart guy, very smart, Isaac Morehouse, right? I mean, him and Derek and who's the other guy? Steven in Pursuit and TK Coleman, they were talking about BCH and BSV for, the following year. And he says, business owners don't want to deal with the volatility and, explain stable coins. They're like, what are stable coins? But the whole idea, I think one of the biggest ideas I try to get across to people is that, listen, at least now in 2020, for the foreseeable future, obviously we want this to change. It's not like you're going to start accepting cryptocurrency at your business and then all of a sudden 45% of your orders are coming in cryptocurrency. It's probably going to be somewhere between 0.5% and maybe 2%. So it's not something that volatility is going to kill your business for 99.9% of businesses. Does that make sense, Kelso? And I think that helps people understand, like, okay, yeah, we can add, we're accepting Bitcoin Cash, and maybe you'll get tons of orders, which would be great, and Bitcoin Cash goes down by 50%. But that seems like at least at this point, an unlikely fear. And I remember going, talking to certain people in the Bitcoin Cash community that, and some of the work in South America, where they're like, only this new store takes it, and they say only 0.5%, 1 out of 200 transactions, is in Bitcoin Cash. And I'm thinking, and this isn't either in Colombia or Venezuela, and I'm thinking, wow, that's amazing. Like 0.5%, that's something. If you get, another couple thousand stores doing 0.5%, I mean, it's not a number to show disdain towards it, in my opinion, considering this is money that, in Bitcoin Cash's case, has only been around for less than 3 years. Was it 2016 or 2017? I think it was 2017,
August 1st,
right?
Of, 2017. Mm-hmm.
It hasn't even been 3 years yet. 0.5% is great, and so, and maybe that's just when it comes to cryptocurrency, the eternal bullish optimist case, which, if you look at my altcoin trading quote, I'll put trading in quotes here because I'm not a real trader. Just one of the people that saw the 17-year-olds on YouTube with charts and stuff. But my trading history speaks for itself. I'm not a good trader, but I will say that where was I going with this? Help me out, Kelso, what were we talking about?
So the adoption, the merchant acceptance, I asked why focusing in on the United States, and you were talking about.
Oh yeah, so I went on a whole tangent there. Yeah, it's simply because regulatory uncertainty. I actually found, I'll be honest, I found this lawyer that says, yeah, you can ship CBD if there's no THC to like Canada and Europe, and then it said free consultation, and then I sent an email to the lawyer. And it turns out you do have to pay like $400 an hour for a consultation. But then I contacted another lawyer, but I'm basically trying to find out. I do think we may be able to send to Canada, but it's just, you really just have to do a lot of guesswork there. But so for now we're just in the US, and Puerto Rico. We got our first order from Puerto Rico, which is cool. And, which is a US territory. But yeah, maybe we'll expand to more countries once there's more clarity going forward.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so important to have you on. Obviously, I have a bias with regard to your podcast history and how much I enjoyed it. So whenever you do anything, I like to talk about it and to highlight it. But also, it's important to kind of get out there and show that there are still people working on the business aspect of it. You've got real skin in the game, and you're a business trying to navigate all the regulations and, you know, using cryptocurrency to try to help do that, I think it's a fascinating story. And it's something that we're definitely going to keep watching, keeping an eye on. If people want to follow you, maybe even want to order some coffee, all that good stuff, where can they find you, Matt?
Yeah, just go to crazycalm, crazycalm.co. And then on Twitter, I'm at Matt Aaron. My email is matt@crazycalm.co. Feel free to reach out for whatever reason. Love to hear from anyone in the BCH community, which I still consider myself a part of, even though I'm no longer with Bitcoin.com. And, you know, I check our BTC multiple times a day still. That's just a habit that's ingrained in me. I'm very excited to stay part of this cryptocurrency thing. Because, you know, one of the things I was very naive, and I'm not the only one here, in that how fast I thought cryptocurrency adoption would happen. It's quite obvious that it's going to take many more years. I think Stephen Pair said my interview maybe a year and a half ago. He's like, "Oh, it's going to be 3 to 5 years." So, I'm half bullish and half just I really want cryptocurrency to work. You know, I think sometimes it's hard to separate whether it's a logical case or just emotionally. You're like cryptocurrency. I mean, I have Kelson. One last thing I'll say especially from the fruit business. And with I'll say Capital One Bank, I cannot stand them. And you know, we're not going to go into 2008 banking crisis, but the amount of problems and the amount of times I've told, and it's not their fault, the poor customer service people at these banks, like, hey, watch out for cryptocurrency, they're coming for you, because like the amount of issues I still have today with banking is incredible. And so sometimes when I feel like, oh man, I feel like BCH is being ignored in the media. Why aren't more publications covering BCH, which I think is fantastic, because it's not just donating to, cryptocurrency to a charity, which is cool in and of itself, but a charity that's based on cryptocurrency where it really is the only payment method that can function. But that's all to say that I every time I get reminded, whether it's with my own personal or business banking fiascos or just seeing things in the news, it just reinvigorates me and gives me more motivation to support the cryptocurrency movement.
Could not have said it better. The great Matt Aaron of Crazy Calm Coffee. Get out there, support the product. Definitely follow Matt and all of his projects. He's someone to watch. A lot of fun. A good guy, and you'll never regret doing business with Matt. Matt, you've been generous to us over the years. We're certainly sad to see you off the crypto podcast scene for now, but I guess even more excited to see how the business grows and what you're up to in the future. Thanks so much again for coming on, man, and we are rooting for you.
Hey, thank you, Kelso. It was fantastic, and I guess that's all there is to it. It was a Sunday interview and a great way to end the late morning here, and thanks again for everyone listening.